welcome to Detroit Today. I'm Nick Austin, filling in for Stephen Henderson. There are a lot of election cycles in American politics, and that means a lot of something else. Lame ducks. And no, I'm not referring to a bird with a limp or even a 20-yard pass from John Kitna, 20 years ago, for those Detroit Lions. No, I'm talking about lame duck sessions that happen every time there's an election, but the newly elected officials haven't taken office yet, so many of the old legislators are still legislating. Well, Michigan just ended a lame duck session last week, and this one was particularly lame. But I still think it holds a lot of insight into what's going on in Lansing and what we should be expecting in the new year. To talk about what happened, why, and what the policy priorities are for Democrats in the upcoming legislative session, we have two great reporters with us. Jordan Hermony is a political reporter for MLive. Jordan, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thanks for having me.
Certainly. And with us also is Rick Pluta, senior state capitol correspondent for the Michigan Public Radio Network. Rick, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Hey there. Hi, Jordan.
Hey, Rick.
Well, Rick, since you passed the ball off to Jordan, we will start with her in terms of my first question, which is, what were the policies that the Michigan legislature tried to get through in lame duck?
Well, tried is definitely the word of emphasis here. What it came down to effectively was we reporters at the Capitol were waiting for something like 16 hours the last day of session earlier this month for effectively a tax cut deal in exchange for a $200 million deposit into Michigan Strategic Outreach and Attraction Reserve Fund. That's the fund that helps court businesses to come and put down their roots in Michigan. And we were hearing that that deposit would have been potentially used to invest in a timber-related industry somewhere in Delta County. We don't have a company name, but that's what the money would have been used for, would have being because that never actually transpired. Sort of at the 11th hour, we were told that the deal fell apart. The deal overall would have been a $500 million roughly agreement that would have helped to supplement and backfill some of the lost revenue from a tax cut that would have gone into effect in exchange for this deposit into the fund. And effectively, when we asked why did this not end up transpiring, there was just finger pointing. Republicans in the House, the higher up Republicans, sort of alleged that Governor Gretchen Whitmer backed out of the deal last moment. The Whitmer administration and high ranking Democrats, particularly in the Senate, say that that was a woeful misrepresentation of how the conversations went down and that there was never really a true deal that had ever been reached. So we're not honestly quite sure why or where it fell apart. But as to what got passed, not much. Smaller ticket items. I think one of the biggest things to come out of the lame duck session was an eight-bill recycling package that had been stalled in the legislature since early 2021. But other than that, lawmakers walked away with not a lot to show for it. And Democrats will take control of both the House, Senate, and keep control of the governorship next year. So there was really no firm incentive for Democrats to try and play all their cards, so to speak, when they would get the ability to be in the driver's seat, leading these conversations, leading these topics and negotiations come January.
Rick, why did lame duck end so early this time around?
Well, I think Jordan nailed it in terms of, you know, Democrats taking control of the troika in terms of adopting bills and policymaking that, there are some things. I mean, one that's, I think, particularly baffling is the earned income tax credit, which would allow low-income working families to claim a bigger tax credit if they are employed. And that's something that there's almost universal agreement that ought to happen, but it's always gotten caught up in other negotiations. So I think that sort of sets the stage for a lot of other things that did not happen in lame duck. I mean, one of them is another one was the presidential primary bill, which can be adopted in the next session, but without a procedural vote would probably not take effect before the presidential primary that we would like to move closer to the front of the line. When I say we, I mean the state of Michigan. Democrats are taking over that they think on a lot of these other policies that there's still plenty of time for them to adopt them in ways that they would prefer. And, you know, if not shut out Republicans, they would have less influence on the final product.
You know, Rick, I'm glad you brought up the earned income tax credits, because I think we can learn a lot both about Democrats and Republicans, both now and moving forward, based on their strategy there. To start, did Whitmer hold that for the future? Because we know that she is in support of expanded earned income tax credit.
Well, I mean, at this point, there's really no other option since it didn't get done in lame duck. But this gets to this whole complaint about Whitmer refusing to bargain, allegedly. And I mean, there's just, on most things, there's not a lot of incentive at this point for the governor to bargain with a majority that's been shown the door and a lot of new legislators coming in. So that not only are the majorities changing, but with new people, that means new relationships. And so the governor, the Democrats, the Republicans, that they can go to these new people and basically start over in terms of learning, what do you want, especially about things that don't necessarily have such a strong partisan hue to them.
Which brings me to my next question, because Republicans know that they're leaving. This is their last time in the majority. If this is something they want, this is their last opportunity to pass it, with it being them as opposed to just Democrats making it happen, yet they let that go. Does that tell us anything on how they're going to perform in the minority coming up in the next term?
Are you asking me?
Yes. Sorry. Oh, okay. Thanks, Rick.
I mean, it says a little bit, you know, I mean, this goes back to, you know, new relationship building. But, you know, these majorities that the Democrats have, they're slim. And everything they do to some degree or another is going to be done having in mind that there's at least a goal of trying to keep these majorities and maybe even build on these majorities going into a presidential year, while at the same time, Republicans are going to be throwing things at them to try and get Democrats to take controversial votes that might get them in trouble, especially in the more swing district, especially if there's no incumbent defending a seat, and maybe there's an opportunity for pickups there.
Jordan, turning back to you, was there anything that Republicans could have done to get these deals through, or is this more a strategic decision of saying, hey, if we can't get what we want now, we'd rather play the opposition in the next term?
You know, that's honestly a great question, and I'm going to come at this from the perspective of, I don't think Republicans thought they would be in this situation following the midterms. And so when they were faced with this concept that they were not going to be continuing to lead these conversations, there was sort of a fission that erupted. I mean, you saw some individuals say that, you know, this was the fault of leaning into these sort of talking points on transgendered children in sports and CRT and book banning and stuff like that. But then you saw House Speaker Jason Wentworth, the outgoing House Speaker, say, you know, no, this is just our fault. We ran bad campaigns. And so I think, you know, when they did end up having to come back at year's end and they did have to wrap up their last couple session days, it was sort of the flip of Dems in disarray. It was a little bit of GOP in disarray. And I don't necessarily know if there's anything that they could have done short of acquiescing to Democrats and you know, center left Dems, the Whitmer administration. I don't necessarily know if there was anything they could have done to move the needle on a lot of these conversations. And I think EITC was one of the unfortunate victims of this lame duck session, because, you know, we had interest groups even saying that this needs to pass this year if the individuals who will benefit from an EITC boost hope to see it on their 2023 tax returns. If not, the wisdom right now is that they're going to have to wait quite a while for this money to return to them.
That's a great point. I mean, these decisions have impact on Michiganders now. Holding it off for a year means holding off on that savings for voters and citizens' pocketbooks. As we're talking again with Jordan Hermony, political reporter with MLive, as well as Rick Pluta, senior state capitol correspondent for the Michigan Public Radio Network here on Detroit Today. And we want to look at the historical context of this lame duck session. As we did mention, it ended a little early, and it also ended with a bit of a whimper. But I ask you, Rick, for historical context, how does this lame duck session compare to lame duck sessions we've had in Michigan in the past?
Oh my goodness! I mean, some of them have just been explosive with big policies being made. And this one, I mean, Jordan, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we had just a little over 50 bills passed, and almost all of them were of little consequence and bigger deals. I'm sorry, did I get that right?
No, I was agreeing. Yeah, I think you're exactly right on the money with that.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there might be some vetoes with no chance for the exiting lawmakers, at least, to go back and revisiting, some policy priorities that maybe were quite important to them when they took office. But, like I said, there just wasn't a big incentive for Democrats to bargain on, even the least controversial stuff, and maybe throw some bones to the exiting Republican majority. And any complaints that Republicans had, including, Speaker Jason Wentworth, who said that, the governor just isn't bargaining on things. And I mean, there might be legit disagreements about the parameters of that complaint, but why would Democrats and why would the governor engage in any intensive bargaining when they're in the catbird seat in the new session?
One of the things, speaking of this transition that did occur during that closing session that has a lot of people talking, is Mike Shirkey's farewell speech. Jordan, before I toss it to Rick, Jordan, can you explain to us, listeners who might not have seen it, exactly what Mark Shirkey did with his time during his farewell speech and the things that he brought up?
I'm going to be honest, even having listened to it, I don't know if I can fully explain it.
That's fair.
There was, for at risk of not further perpetuating conspiracy theories, Mike Shirkey did sort of ping pong back and forth between interesting anecdotes surrounding the Capitol, including one where he believed the toilet water was heated in a Senate office building and may or may not have stuck his hand in the bowl to test that. I don't have any sources sort of confirming or denying that. So moving past that, though, he did use some of his time, however, to encourage bipartisanship, which many lawmakers did in their exiting speech, but then also sort of struck a rather bizarre note. And I was told, though I was in the House, we had a reporter in the Senate, that the air was incredibly tense when he shifted to sort of speaking about this shadowy global elite that hopes to unite our country under one, or our world, I'm sorry, under one currency and religion. And it was just very, very bizarre. Not at all what a typical outgoing speech is, because for those listening at home, they're very typically, almost like Oscar speeches. They're like, I want to thank my mom. Thank you for my wife. Thank you for my husband for being there for me this whole time. Very excited of the things we got done. Glad to work with you all. So this was a very odd note for one of the Senate's top Republicans to go out on.
That's right. And again, we're talking about
the Senate's very top Republican. I did watch it, and it went on for a while, but he is the Senate Majority Leader, or he was, and it was kind of standard fare of thanking his family and his staff and talking about some things that he was proud to have accomplished. And then it suddenly veers into calling COVID-19 a surprise foreign attack that was that was actually planned, that scientists, the governor knew about COVID-19 and didn't do what was necessary because they had different plans. It's hard to follow because it was so disjointed. And, you know, he talked about natural immunity, which he was really pushing a lot, you know, throughout the Senate session. COVID-19 vaccines weren't effective. And then, you know, I mean, the ones that everyone sort of keyed in on because of the bizarre nature of it was, you know, claiming that he saw that the water was boiling in the toilets in the Capitol. He put his hand in the water to, you know, prove to himself that it was true, and asking himself why there's boiling water in the toilet seats in the Capitol, and which raised all kinds of questions, you know, one of them being, why did you put your hand in the toilet? And he predicted, I mean, more or less, that we're in the end times.
Yeah. Well, that prediction's been happening for a while there, Rick. But I'll tell you, when we're talking about a state Senate Majority Leader, Republican Mike Shirkey, outgoing speaker, not so sure that we've had a speech like that before. I don't know if that portends having speeches like that in the future. I will tell you, Mike, if you want to prove water's boiling, you don't put your hand in there. That'll be scalding. You know, you're going to need to go see a nurse. Get a thermometer, my friend. There are ways.
Well, I've been covering the Capitol for 30 years, and at least in my time there, I have never witnessed a departing speech like that, and some of them have been weird.
Yeah, well, Rick, before we get out of here, I know that you have to leave, and I'll let you go, but any final thoughts on the lame duck session and what's ahead for Lansing in the next term?
Well, I mean, the phrase that everyone has, which is the lame duck session, was by and large lame in terms of time spent. It was a lot more on farewell speeches, which before term limits didn't take a whole lot of time because it was sort of a trickle of people leaving, that now have become, it's probably time to retire this tradition, because we're talking about people who have served 6 years or 8 years, maybe, you know, and some who've served a lot longer just because they've been in the House and the Senate. And it takes days and a ton of scheduling and prolongs the end of the year session without taking into account the actual policy initiatives that need to be taken care of by maybe even a couple of weeks.
Rick Pluta, senior state capitol correspondent for the Michigan Public Radio Network and sometimes plumber extraordinaire, thank you for your expertise today on Detroit Today.
I appreciate the time.
When we return here on Detroit Today, we're going to continue our conversation with Jordan Hermony and discuss with you questions the next legislative session, including what do you want to see the state pick up? What are your biggest concerns for the upcoming session? And what do you think Democrats should give priority to? Give us a call, 313-577-1019. And when we return, we'll get to your calls and continue with Jordan.
WDET is your connection to what's happening in Detroit.
WDET is your place for open dialogue about the issues that impact you.
Stay in the know.
This is WDET FM,
Detroit's NPR station.
Today on 101.9 WDET, I'm Nick Austin, filling in for Stephen Henderson, joined by Jordan Hermony, a political reporter for MLive, discussing not only the lame duck session that just occurred in the Michigan State Legislature, but what we can expect moving forward. And we want to include you in this portion of the conversation, as you can give us a call, 313-577-1019, to let us know what you're thinking about moving forward. What kind of policies do you want the state legislature to pass in the upcoming session? What are your biggest concerns? What kind of things do you think Democrats should give priority to? Give us a call again, that number 313-577-1019, or you can even get in touch with us on Twitter using the hashtag Detroit Today. Back in my day, we called it a pound sign. But Jordan, I want to bring that to you right now because that is the question on everyone's mind. We want to give you an opportunity to let us know what policies the Michigan what policies Democrats are gearing up to pass in this upcoming session.
So whether they are ready to or not, the fight over raising the state's minimum wage is more than likely going to be top of mind for the legislature. So backing up a little bit in explanation of this, in 2018, there were two petition initiatives that went around the state. One was to raise the minimum wage. Another was to expand sick leave for workers. And those were signed. And the legislature at the time decided to adopt those petitions rather to then let them go to the ballot. It's one of two things that can occur with these kinds of petition initiatives. So they adopted the petition into law. And then later that same session, they changed it and scaled back the minimum wage portion specifically so that the initial petition called for increasing the minimum wage to $12 an hour. They made that so, yes, it would increase to $12, but by 2030 and only if employment remained low, advocates of the initial petition immediately cried foul. They were just upset and believed that this was an abuse of power by the legislature. But at the time, the Attorney General, Bill Schuette, argued that the legislature could do this, which led to the term adopt and amend, which was, you know, a commonplace between 2018 and now. However, earlier this summer, the courts ruled that the move that the legislature did do in 2018 was, in fact, not valid. They could not do that. They could not adopt a law and amend it in the same session. So what we're looking at currently, minimum wage in Michigan is about $9.87, I want to say. The measure would still boost it to $12 an hour, but where the interest is for tipped workers. So tipped workers right now make just underneath $4 an hour, not counting their tips. They would see a 200-something% jump in their pay to just under $10 an hour. And, you know, there's a Court of Appeals hearing going on today, actually, to try and figure out whether or not this is going to be implemented, because we're looking at a potential February 20th, 2023 implementation date for this 2018 ballot initiative, which, especially in the restaurant industry, other tipped industries, they're arguing they will not be able to handle an overnight sort of just jump from, you know, just under $4 to, you know, just under $12, that's going to cause them to lay off staff, that's going to cause them to scale back workers. And so the legislature is going to need to step in, it's believed, in order to figure out whether this is going to be a slow scale into this $12 an hour minimum wage, how it's going to be implemented. And all of these conversations that should have been going on ahead of this simply haven't. Or at least they haven't been in the public sphere. So what is going to happen remains to be seen, but the legislature is definitely going to have to weigh in on something prior to February, or else Michigan could be in a very, very interesting predicament.
Yeah, a short time window to make something happen that could have a tremendous impact on a lot of workers and a very important industry here, hospitality, restaurants, tipped staff. But right now we're going to get to the phone lines as we have Ray in Pontiac. Wait a second. We got Ray on Pontiac. Ray, go ahead. You're on Detroit Today.
Oh.
You're good. Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I'm a senior, and the former governor, Rick Snyder, put that egregious pension tax on us pensioners during his administration. And Governor Whitmer ran her first term saying that she was going to rescind that pension tax. She didn't get it done in her first term. Now that she has the backing of Congress, I would be interested to know what Rick and your other guests believe she would do this term,
right,
with that backing. Right. Would she relieve us of that egregious pension tax?
Right, right. That, great question, Ray. I can't call Rick back, but Jordan, I would present the question to you. Pension tax, is on, that on the table, repealing that?
It is. It is. The Whitmer administration, when we've been talking about tax cuts throughout the better part of the last 2 years or so, raising the EITC, repealing pension tax for seniors, and providing rebates for electric vehicle use are some of the ways that the Whitmer administration has offered giving, you know, financial relief to residents. Republicans, at the same vein, during that time when they held control of the legislature, instead wanted to go about it from cutting an income tax rate and establishing a child tax credit, broadening exemption on retirement incomes. So I would be surprised, considering, as Ray did correctly point out, Governor Whitmer did run on repealing that tax. And now that she has her party in control of both chambers, I do think that that is something that is, you know, very feasibly on the table.
That would seem like a lighter lift, too. I mean, do we have any idea of what the Michigan Dems in the House and Senate would feel about that, or do we still need more time to collect that information?
I mean, I don't see why they wouldn't support that. It's one of the more, I guess, across the table issues that Dems have been in favor of doing. So like I said, I would honestly be more surprised if over the next 2 years we don't see any movement on that.
Ray in Pontiac, thank you again for the call, as that was an excellent question and gives us an opportunity to move to Neil in Sterling Heights. Neil, go ahead. You're on Detroit Today.
All right. Good morning. I'd like to see the legislature do something about the way the gas tax is set up in the state. Because currently, wholesale sales of gas tax, they don't pay the wholesale sales of fuel, excuse me, gas. They don't pay the gas tax, only the retail sales. So like companies like UPS and FedEx and Amazon, who buy their fuel wholesale, they don't pay the gas tax, but they're using the roads just like everyone else is and causing more damage. Additionally, I like to see also the legislature try to do something to have safer streets throughout the whole state, with better trained police and also better paid and police officers and better paid school teachers as well. That's my what I'd like to see the legislature take care of.
Appreciate your points there, Neil. Jordan, have any of those items been something that Michigan Dems have talked about doing in the upcoming session?
So good news for Neil with regard to increased funding for police officers. There's actually been movement on supplementals that have gone through the legislature that do give, or bills as well, that give, you know, further funding to secondary road patrol. They hope to bolster recruitment and retention of police officers throughout Michigan. If I remember correctly, as this appropriation specifically did move through the legislature a little while ago, there was this sort of incentive to get police officers from other states to move to Michigan, and sort of a host of things that would go along with that to make sure that they would stay in Michigan. As for safer streets, I know that the Whitmer administration has been attempting to make some moves there, but I will admit that that is not something I am as knowledgeable on. If I do remember correctly, though, there have been several instances where Governor Whitmer has touted getting more firearms off the streets, and that sort of couples in with the increased funding for police and road patrol. As for the gas tax, Michigan's gas tax is going to go up another cent and a half starting January 1 because of an automatic adjustment written into state law. So that will bring us to, I believe, 28, just underneath 29 cents per gallon, according to the Treasury Department. So, you know, like I feel like I've been saying this a lot with everything post-lame duck, I guess everything's on the table. But with regard to some of these points that he just brought up, some movement has already been made and is continuing to be made on certain topics.
Thank you so much, Neil, for the call and your questions. As we have open lines for you now, 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. Give us a call. Tell us what you would like to see Democrats do in the legislature, any bills that you think should be proposed for this upcoming term. Also, as we discussed the potential rate hike, the potential, I should say, wage hike for tipped employees. Maybe you're a restaurant worker, a tipped employee, or maybe you're someone who runs a restaurant. You can give us some insight into the concerns that you have about that shift that happens in February if the legislature doesn't attack the problem and maybe perhaps put in some smoothing. As we also have a comment from Ed Van S. on Twitter saying, wave bye-bye to Right to Work as soon as possible. Jordan, I present that to you, Right to Work. I know you've said everything's on the table. Has there been any clamoring or statements from people saying that Right to Work could be something that Democrats are looking to attack the coming term?
So actually, the day that the House Democrats elected their new floor leadership, so, you know, House Speaker, Floor Leader, et cetera, who they elected as, I believe, the floor leader, Ayash, immediately told reporters that Right to Work was on the table. You know, Michigan's one of 20-something states, I think it's 23 or 24, with this law that was enacted under the Snyder administration, implemented in 2013, which prohibits employers from requiring union membership. Along with several other things. Democrats have not only put this on the table, I feel like it's effectively been slammed on the table, and very, very likely that we will see some kind of traction on this, considering it was quite literally one of the first things that came out of lawmakers' mouth when we scrummed with them following the election of their new members to their new leadership positions.
Yeah, you know, I you hear about this all the time, but I've also heard people say, talk is cheap. Show me with your actions. And that's why I'm really intrigued about legislation, again, with the understanding that they have not taken the majority yet. But certainly there's been legislation that was passed around while they had the minority to put pressure on Republicans in the state House and state Senate that they looked at. Are there any bills that were put forth that had vast support from Dems that we know could be lighter lifts again for them just to present in the next term and actually move those forward? Any tangible things that we know they could act on in the upcoming term?
Well, I mean, I know we mentioned the big ones, right? The raising the earned income tax credit. I mean, that had bipartisan support and was just an unfortunate casualty of the lame duck session. I mean, the bill out of the Senate was even sponsored by a Republican, and you had Republican former Republican lawmakers that are currently in interest group positions just saying that, you know, if you don't pass this now, it's a very selfish move. But speaking to lighter topics, I mean, one that I can think of off the top of my head that I know I had a Republican come mention to me on his way out the door that he was mad that did not get passed was Michigan currently has nothing on the books regarding fertility fraud. I recognize that that's sort of an abrupt change of conversation, but
didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, fertility fraud. It was did receive bipartisan support, and again was another very unfortunate casualty of lame duck. There is no law on the books in Michigan regarding a doctor who uses a non-approved sample in artificial insemination for women looking to get pregnant. I will let readers sort of fill in the blanks there, but instead of using the approved genetic material, he uses his own, and that is very gross, not to sound childish, but that's just a placeholder for other words I imagine many other people would like to use. Again, something that had bipartisan support fell apart at the last minute because of backroom negotiations and bills that just otherwise did not get moved to the front. As Rick mentioned earlier, moving the presidential primary, again, something that had bipartisan support, again, was introduced actually by the same senator, if I remember correctly, Republican senator who introduced the earned income tax credit cut, Wayne Schmidt. There's several items that I would not be surprised if we hit the ground running on. Those are among them.
All right. Speaking of Republicans, by the way, we touched on it a little bit in the first segment, but do we have any idea of what the Republican strategy will be in the minority now and whether they plan on running different candidates 2 years from now? I know that's a little early to get into that, if we have any idea on whether they want to tack more to the moderates to try to get back power, or are they going to look to run more extreme candidates and try to rally the base with their legislative proposals and candidates?
I'm going to be frank. I don't even think they're fully aware of their own game plan currently. Sure. And that's not to sound disparaging. It's just, I mean, you look to the state party right now and the fight that's going on over the Michigan Republican Party chair forward slash co-chair position. Current chair Ron Weiser is not going to be seeking the position again. Current co-chair Michonne Maddock, who is the wife of current state representative Matt Maddock, she, to my knowledge, at least publicly, has not really weighed in on whether or not she plans to run again. So she is an unknown. But I mean, the Weiser-Maddock dichotomy sort of represents where we're at currently, where Weiser was a bit more of the quote-unquote old guard Republican. Michonne Maddock came up through the grassroots and really seized power and helped grassroots-style Republicans and grassroots efforts come up through the Republican Party. However, we did see that get just I shouldn't say monumentally, but we did see that get by and large smacked down at the state level. Republicans lost the House. They lost the Senate for the first time in decades. A little fun fact I always like giving is the last time that Dems had the Senate, MASH was still airing.
Yes, MASH.
Just to put it in perspective. You wouldn't maybe know that, though, if you listen to now incoming House Minority Leader Matt Hall. When he was disparaging the fact that the governor did not, from his perspective, come to the table and reach an agreement with Republicans over this tax cut for an economic incentive deal, he sort of panned it as being, you know, the House is entering in a 56-54 majority for the Democrats, which is very, very close. And I think the exact phrase he used was bipartisan deal making is going to be at a premium. So, you know, if you look at it from Hall's perspective, he seems to be giving this idea that there is going to be need to be a lot of meeting in the middle. There's going to need to be a lot of this bipartisan camaraderie. And obviously this was our first House and Senate election underneath newly redistricted maps, which by and away did largely bring things to be more competitive and make Michigan far more purple. So is he right? Sort of remains to be seen. It's obviously very easy to pontificate in, you know, 2022, end of December, when, you know, come January, this could be something completely different. But it sounds from what the House is saying that bipartisanship and coming more towards the middle is going to need to be priority for Republicans. Now, whether that is center right or center left remains to be seen. But with Democrats in control, it wouldn't shock me if Republicans do need to play, no pun intended, a bit more conservative with their conservative politics, in the sense of not maybe trying to hit all of their wish list items and instead be more open and willing to meet and come to an agreement on, you know, something that they may not fully be backing.
Right, right. Well, Jordan, we're going to have to end it there. I'm sure Adam Alda is excited to hear that what Michigan's going through, bringing up MASH again, as we will close out this segment with you. Jordan Hermony, political reporter with MLive. Thanks so much for joining us on Detroit Today.
Thank you for having me.
When we continue on Detroit Today, very interesting conversation, as we're going to have a chance to stay in the state legislature, but turn to a resolution aimed at putting a statue of former Detroit Mayor Coleman Young in the U.S. Capitol with State Senator Autumn Ollier. Keep it locked right here as Detroit Today continues.